Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Marking Out with Mike. I am Michael Flanagan, and I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen to this, wherever you may be in the world at this time. It is a historic Wednesday. Wednesdays always have a very exciting feel for us as wrestling fans, because now we have three shows we can enjoy every Wednesday, aside from all of the other incredible things that are going on in the wrestling world. You've got an hour of MLW, Major League Wrestling. We've got 2 hours of AEW on TNT. And then we also get our 2 hours from WWE NXT on the USA Network, at least here in the United States. But also on the topic of the United States, it's a historic day because regardless of your political affiliation, we are swearing in a new president of our country, a new president of the United States, and for the first time ever, a female vice president. Now, regardless of who you supported in the election and whether you're happy or unhappy, you have to look at the fact that it is absolutely amazing that we now have a woman as our vice president, the first time in this country's history, and also just the fact of like the historical significance that has, you know, regardless of her party's affiliation and regardless of, you know, whatever your personal and political opinions of this woman may be. This now creates a scenario where young women, not only American women, but just really young women around the world now, this is another strong, powerful woman that they can look up to and tell themselves, like, I can do anything a man can do. I have all the power. I have all the aspirations and the dreams, and I can chase anything. It's awesome to see a level playing field and to know that everyone, regardless of how they identify or what their gender may be, has the option to go on and be great. So I think it's really amazing. That's about all the political talk you're going to get from me. I'm not a crazy political person. I just, you know, as long as my country is not burning to the ground like it was on January 6th, and as long as my family is healthy and all my bills are paid, at the end of the day, that's all I care about. As long as I got some disposable income for these wrestling action figures and going to these wrestling shows and being able to pay my electric bill so I can put on this amazing podcast for you guys every week and every day, is all I care about. So speaking of wrestling toys, we talked at length yesterday for close to 40 minutes, and a lot of the show was about the AEW line and how the Unmatched series is coming out and how there will be AEW figure releases every single month now once things get rolling. And we talked about Series 4, the new series that's going to feature another Cody and Kenny Omega figure, also the first ever figures for Proud and Powerful, and Sammy Guevara. And then Matt Hardy is going to be getting his first AEW figure as well. And as of right now, when I record this podcast live here on the West Coast in California at 12:19 p.m. local time, the Ringside Collectibles website has the Series 4 up for pre-order. As of right now, if you order it right in this second, and I imagine most of you will hear this podcast a bit later than when it's originally being put out, but they are up for pre-order. Everything is in stock as of right now and is available for mid-March delivery. So pretty fast turnaround. You do have to remember that February is a short month. I have still been seeing people giving the line grief and complaining about how they haven't been able to get their hands on all the figures they want. And I do feel for people, but based on my experience as a pretty diehard collector, somebody who has tweet notifications turned on for Jeremy Padware, the guy who is the president of Jazzwares and makes these figures, I'm constantly following Ringside Collectibles across all social media. So I'm a pretty diehard, and I'm hunting the stores on a regular basis. I'm even checking weird places like CVS's and flea markets and trying to find any wrestling memorabilia anywhere I can. So I know that not everyone is like me, but I will say, based on my experience, outside of Series 1, they've done a pretty damn good job. Series one was about 2 weeks late, and then it hit retail. And if you didn't scoop it up right away, it has been hard to come by, and you've probably found yourself buying it from scalpers or other people on eBay. And that part is unfortunate, and so I do feel for people. But even, you know, Series 2, now Series 3, and going into Series 4, in my opinion, they've handled it quite well. Series 2 was delayed, but they were very transparent about it. They said, hey, you know, these things are coming out of Hong Kong, China, and there's delays due to the manufacturing problems and due to social distancing at these warehouses. You have to split these workers up. If you've ever been in a warehouse, if you've ever had any sort of manufacturing job, these places are packed to the brims with workers. They're filled like a can of sardines. And so when you tell these places that are manufacturing on a global scale, when you tell these people that they now have to work at 30% capacity or half capacity and everybody's got to be 6 feet apart, that means that some of your workload is just not working because they cannot physically, safely be in these warehouses next to one another and still meet the demand. So now you've got these capacities working at limited or half capacity, and it slows stuff down. It takes a long time to put stuff on a boat and ship it across the Pacific Ocean and get it to the, you know, the West Coast and the rest of the world. And everything through Walmart has to go to Arkansas first because that's where everything's based, and then it all gets shipped out. So it's part of a process. And I think that I think some people are just dense and unaware to how distribution really works. We just know we walk into Walmart, and if we need a jug of milk, it's always been there for us. So to run out of supplies like toilet paper and stuff has really been kind of a shocker and an eye-opener to some people. And some people just continue to be dense. I'm going to be as polite as I possibly can be and just, you know, not call anybody dumb or stupid, but some people are just dense. They're unaware. Maybe they didn't ever work a job that allowed them to kind of realize how the world really works. But once Series 2 hit shelves, even though it was delayed, I got mine from Ringside Collectibles pretty instantaneous. And then multiple Walmarts around me, including here still today, have had them just sitting on shelves. Like, they're already shelf warmers. And I can't directly confirm, but people I know in Fresno, which is in Southern California, have actually had pictures and have made claims that they have now started to see the AEW line on shelves in Targets. So we thought that that maybe wasn't going to come till fall. Then there was some word and some talk that it was going to be happening possibly as early as the spring. But, you know, here we are at the beginning of the year, mid-January, and supposedly Target locations are getting them. There's been SKUs, which is the UPC number that Target uses, that's been put out. And now, supposedly as of today, Series 2 was spotted in an actual Target store. So who knows for certain, as more time goes on, we'll see if that was a staged photo or if there's any validity to it. But I have all the confidence in the world that once Target gets involved and once we have our Unmatched series and our Unrivaled series, there's going to be a lot more availability. And when you launch a new line, a new toy line, you have to prove yourself. You have to show the manufacturer. The people who run the Targets and the Walmarts of the world are not wrestling fans. They're not sitting around. They don't know the reach that pro wrestling has. They don't realize, like, this, it seems like a niche sport, you know, because there's the stigma that it's fake. And people don't realize that Marvel is fake, and Marvel sells millions of dollars all around the world. And wrestling has that same reach and that same power. And so Jazzwares, especially, come on, what does Jazzwares make? Like, they make Fortnite toys. Like, they're not a big player. They're not Mattel. They're not out here, you know, breaking down doors and setting toy sales records. So these companies are hesitant, and rightfully so. So Jeremy did what he did. He made the demand high and the supply low, and that pissed some fans off. But guys, we're working jobs at fast food restaurants. This man is running a $1 million toy company. He's cutting deals with billion-dollar corporations. Like, this is not your father's garage sale. This isn't Facebook Marketplace. This isn't some overnight success story. This is a man who's been in the toy industry a long time via Jack's Pacific, and now what he's doing over here. He's not only been in toys a long time, he's been in wrestling toys specifically a long time. This man knows what he's doing. He's completely transparent with his fans, and people still shit on this man and tear him down for things outside of his control. So I'm going to come to his defense and tell people you need to have realistic expectations. Series 3, I ordered it late. I was part of they did waves of the pre-order, and I was part of wave 4 of the pre-order, and I'll have mine according to the FedEx tracking information on the 26th of January, which is a pretty fast turnaround time considering when I ordered it. You figure if I'm going to get wave 4 now in March, and I ordered it here today on January the 19th, the 20th rather, I'm getting it delivered in basically 2 months. Like, that's a really insane fast turnaround. You guys have heard me say I work in the mattress sale. If you order a mattress right now from Simmons Beauty Rest, I know this isn't exciting, so we won't linger on this. One of the biggest mattress companies in the world, one of the oldest mattress companies in the world, second to only Sealy. They've literally been around since the mid-1800s. If you order a bed from those guys, you're getting it in 90 days, 3 months later. So if some of the biggest brands on the globe are having these problems, and little Jeremy and Jazzwares are able to get us our wrestling action figures in 2 months turnaround, and they're working on getting a new line out for consumers every 30 days, every month, that is absolutely phenomenal. I don't understand what anyone expects, how it could be any better. It's already as good as it's going to get. It's better than we deserve. Most of us aren't even going to be able to have disposable income once a month to buy these things after we pay our bills and, you know, buy our kids toys and do the other things you have to do as an adult in life. Like, I would actually hate to be a parent right now of a young wrestling fan who wants these figures, because these things are going to turn around faster than you can purchase them. A full line is roughly $150 if you get all 6 of them. Maybe a little less if you buy them at retail and you're not paying for shipping, but it's interesting time. So, you know, tie down your wallets, because the money is going to be flying out of there if you're serious about collecting. I opted to not get Kenny and Cody because I already have 2 Kenny Omegas. I have the Series 1 Kenny, which I've actually not opened. I am a loose collector. I don't collect mint on card. I open all my figures and display them and use them and play with them. But I liked the Kenny that came with the ring better, the authentic scale ring they made. I loved the green tights. Green is my favorite color. I also like the authenticity of his hair. So that's the one I've been using. And eventually I will open the other one because I like the ring jacket that it comes with. But these figures are coming out faster than I can actually open them, because between life and work and, you know, other things that keep me away from my collection, in my downtime, I'm not able to integrate these guys into my figure federation fast enough, because I'm also collecting the Mattel line and the things that were being put out by other wrestling companies. And so, I don't know, no complaints on my end. I did order, there was no hesitation. Sammy Guevara, I purchased. He's probably going to be the star of that series. Each series kind of has like their standout. I think for Series 1, it was probably Cody with those blue and gold tights. That was probably the best one. Of course, Chris Jericho has the most star power from that line. I think that's the guy everybody knows. But even the bubbly Jericho, that was a better made Jericho. So Cody, I would say, was the star of that one. Series 2 was probably MJF. Just the scarf, the microphone, just That was probably the best one. These are just my opinions. I really like the Adam Hangman Page. I just like his character in general. But based on conversations I've had with people, that is not a must-have. Moxley, actually, I may take that back. Moxley and MJF would probably go head-to-head for the best figure from Series 2, with Moxley probably taking the cake. That's a really good figure. A lot of times when they come with like jackets and stuff, it's kind of annoying because you can't really make them wrestle one another when they're wearing those ring jackets, at least in my opinion, especially the ones like Kenny Omega, where they have the longer sleeves, like the jackets we sometimes see on guys like Edge or The Undertaker. But the Mox jacket kind of fits him. So even though he does wrestle shirtless, you really can kind of use his jacket, in my opinion. So it's kind of neat. And then Series 3, I think, is hands down, no debate, Darby Allin. I haven't seen it live in person yet, but that seems to be the best figure. And then we don't know what the prototype pictures are going to look like for all of Series 4 yet. We do have some prototype, like drawn images of Sammy's figure, but we have to see. I think a Matt Hardy figure could potentially look really cool, depending on what they do with his hair. I was really hesitant to order these because we haven't seen the proofs yet. And when I ordered the basic version of Rhea Ripley from Mattel from the WWE line, I was greatly disappointed. They put some tattoos on her, and her head scan is absolutely phenomenal, perfect, in fact. But the lack of articulation is just absolutely garbage. Obviously, I knew she wasn't going to get like the jointed stomach and things like that because it wasn't an elite. But I don't know. I got the Tegan Knox, which was a basic from the very next series, and that one was very good. Her knees could actually bend. The Rhea Ripley, the knees can't bend. The legs are too long and skinny to support her upper body frame. So it's actually the only action figure in my entire life, and I own hundreds of these things, that you cannot stand and pose. And it's super frustrating. And if you can somehow tweak it and like fan her arms out so where she looks like a bird, you can sometimes get her to stand, but it was really disappointing. So I usually don't order figures if I can't see the proofs, but the AEW line has actually, in my opinion, improved. Series 1 was good articulation and good details on like the clothing that they wear, but the realisticness of them was kind of shitty. They definitely looked like toys. They weren't as realistic as some other wrestling figures I've seen. But even in Series 2, they've already improved that quite a bit. So I'm curious to see what Series 3 is like when I get it in hand. And I have faith that Series 4 will be even better. But like I said, I skipped Cody and I skipped Kenny just because there's so many of those figures already available. And I'm not a completist. I do have everyone from Series 1. I have the Bubbly Jericho, the Authentic Scale Ring Kenny. So all of that is complete. I skipped the Blood Brothers, the Dustin and Cody Blood Pack. That didn't really appeal to me. I didn't care about that. They do look cool, but not my style. And then I do have a complete series of Series 2. And due to FOMO, which is fear of missing out, I did order a complete wave of Series 3 because when I was trying to order just the figures I wanted, like Darby Allin and some of the others, it wasn't going through because the demand on the website was really high. So what I ended up doing was just ordering the complete pack and getting the Young Bucks, which I didn't necessarily want a new version of the Bucks. But I'm kind of glad that I did because the detailing on them seems better. I hate that Matt Jackson is posed with a open mouth. I think that's a little silly. I've never liked that, or like I don't like how the Pentagon figure has his tongue sticking out. But it is what it is. Those are minor details that I can look past because the overall detail of the figures is really, really great, in my opinion. So hopefully they don't just burn down the barn with a really crazy Cody figure and Kenny figure. I'm pretty happy with the Cody that and the Kenny. I have two Kennys. So as of right now, I do have everybody, with the exception of the Blood Brothers and the United Kingdom exclusive version of Cody with the silver tights. But I don't feel like I'm missing out on any of those. But the Series 4 will be the one that I did not get everyone on. I did opt in without hesitation for Sammy and Santana and Ortiz. I went right away for without hesitation. Matt Hardy, I did think twice about, but I realized that the Matt Hardy I have is really old from his Team Extreme days. So I was like, okay, I need to upgrade my Matt Hardy. There's been some cool ones that have come out in the last many, many years that I've always skipped for some reason. So I figure even without seeing a photo of it, I do have faith that Jazzwares will do something cool. Maybe they'll make the red and black hair Matt Hardy. Maybe they'll make a more modern Matt Hardy like we're seeing now. But I was like, I want to get that. It'll be his first Jazzwares fig and possibly one of his last figures, because he is in the tail end of his career. So I was like, let me go ahead and get that. I think that'll be a safe bet. So really excited to see the photos come out on those and eventually get those figures in March. But kind of moving on from figures, we did have Impact Wrestling. Was last night, it was on Tuesday. I'm trying to get back into really doing this show every single day for the fanatics that care to listen to my voice for an hour a day. And when I was doing it before, I was doing all the majors. You know, I was covering the three shows a week from WWE. I was covering All Elite Wrestling. And then I was even covering Impact as well. And, you know, I want to throw Major League Wrestling in there. I don't think that they have enough content right now that I could do a full podcast about them, because they only have about three matches per show. But I want to mix them in, and the demand is so high because there's so much wrestling content, it's hard to watch everything. But eventually I want to get into doing more coverage on Ring of Honor. I'm really bad about watching it, though. I am a fan, and I enjoy what they do, and I like guys like Mike Bennett and whatnot. But it has been challenging for me to stay up on their product. But I do want to get into it and do that, because there are smaller guys like NWA and Ring of Honor and MLW that are still putting on high-quality products. If you asked me, I think of those three, MLW is doing the best job overall from top to bottom. I like that they have their television partners and their other deals in place, but I enjoy that they don't shy away from the power of social media. And I really like that they put their content on YouTube. NWA does as well. But MLW always pops up every Wednesday on my YouTube feed, and I never miss any of the action. Whereas NWA hasn't popped up recently, so I need to go in and check my settings. And Ring of Honor is good. If you go to their website, you can watch it. But if you don't remember, it's challenging, because depending on where you live in the world, the availability is actually different. And so that's why YouTube is so attractive to me, because you can watch YouTube anywhere. And if you're a really crazy diehard and the content is not there fast enough, you can use VPNs to change your location in the world and change it to the United States or somewhere else and actually watch it at a time that may be more convenient for you. So want to get those guys in there. But I had shied away from covering Impact just because the accessibility of it was really shitty. They don't do YouTube or anything like that. They are on Twitch, but the Twitch experience with the chat room and with Brian Cage's girlfriend or wife or whatever she is, I don't like it, because she's not mature. Like, she's not immature, but it's weird to sit there as a man, a grown man in his 30s, in his mid-30s, and to watch a professional wrestling show, and during what would be a commercial break, there's a chat. Which is cool. That's actually a really cool idea. I'd much rather listen to more wrestling content than to see a KFC commercial. But the things she talks about are not wrestling related. She'll do like a really slow, forgetful recap of what we just saw. And it's like, okay, we don't need to recap it right now. Like, we can talk about other things. And then she'll go off topic and she'll ask people what they ate for dinner. And we'll start talking about like chicken and eggs and stuff. And it's just probably me being nitpicky, but it's really weird. And then there's certain things that she's not allowed to talk about, because, you know, they don't want to reference WWE. And so fans will ask all this nonsense in the chat box and she can't talk about it. Thankfully, now that there's a partnership with AEW, she probably could have talked about Brian Cage, but she wasn't. And she wasn't on the show the first night that they partnered with AEW, but then she was back. And then I noticed she wasn't on Twitch again last night. And I don't know if that's a conscious decision or if she just had things going on and she was unavailable, but I kind of like not having it on there. I like just watching on Twitch. They do like TNA flashbacks to back when it was total nonstop action. And it's more mature. It's just better. And I feel like the viewership is actually higher when she's not there, because when I used to watch, the viewership would sometimes fluctuate from like 1800 to like 2000 some odd people, and like sometimes 3000 on a good night. But last night it was up to 8000, which on Twitch is pretty decent numbers for them. And you know, I hate to say that she's a ratings killer, because I don't think it's that serious. I have nothing, you know, against her, but it's just, I don't know. She would be a good person for like whatever AEW is trying to do with AEW heels. Like, it's very effeminate, and like she talks about her kids and her family and her outfit and her hair and what she's cooking. And, you know, there's a certain segment of casual fans that I think are interested in listening to stuff like that. But I don't think that white dudes like me want to hear a girl talk about how she made a chicken masala. Like, I don't know. So let's talk about Impact though. So they were just coming off of the Hard to Kill pay-per-view, which I did not watch. They didn't do a good enough job selling me on it. I almost bought the show exclusively for the main event. I was going to watch, you know, Kenny and the Good Brothers versus Motor City Machine Guns and Rich Swann. That's even though Rich Swann is kind of the odd man out there, that did scream, I don't want to really say dream match, but just, you know, the Good Brothers and Motor City Machine Guns and Kenny was enough for me, that I was willing to overlook it. But then one half of the Machine Guns got COVID or whatever the hell happened, and he had to be pulled from the match, which I completely understand, and I'm, you know, glad that they're going for safety over ratings. But then they put Moose in there. You're telling me you have an entire roster, like, you have disposal of AEW and Impact, and you went with Moose? Like, Moose is the most bland man in wrestling right now. He might be one of the single most boring superstars on there. They've been doing that storyline where he's like, I found the TNA championship. I'm the TNA champion now. No, Moose, you're not the champion. You just found an old prop that you were lugging around. That's okay. I'm going to keep carrying it. And EC3 is going to steal it. And it means a lot to me. And I'm mad. And he's going to try to set it on fire. And I'm going to chase him. And it's like, okay, you've been doing that storyline now for months and months and months. They're not doing anything. Now he's apparently going to go up against WWE Cruiserweight Rich Swann for the World Championship. And please don't let that man win the title. Please keep the belt on Rich and then eventually take it off of Rich, because he's not that cool either. But at least he's more entertaining. Moose is just so bland. You take Moose and the Michael Elgins of the world, which apparently he's back in Impact, which is terrible. And it's just, they're these over-muscly guys that just don't do anything. So between that and the Ethan Page Karate Man cinematic thing, which even Ethan Page didn't like that match. And I'm an Ethan Page fan. I like his vlogs. I watch him on YouTube. That's actually where I heard that he was probably leaving Impact before, you know, he officially did leave Impact. But that Karate Man thing is just so silly. And the cinematic thing has just been done to death. Unless it's going to be something special like a Firefly Funhouse match or a Boneyard match or Matt Hardy's deletions. We've just seen it all. And that's all he's doing is a similar angle to what Matt was doing. Like a guy versus the same guy, like it's just really silly. And so unfortunately I was like, well, at best, if I'm being generous, I'm a Impact fan simply due to fear of missing out. You know, I don't really think that they have a great product compared to really every other major wrestling promotion. If you were to rank NWA, Ring of Honor, all those guys, Impact would be in the bottom three for me. That's just my opinion. Maybe I'm a hipster. But I was like, I can't justify, you know, paying that much money for a show if it's not going to be a couple more A-plus home run type matches. But Impact would kick off with Don Callis and Kenny Omega. They were with the Good Brothers, and they were celebrating their win over the hodgepodge team of Moose and Rich Swann and the other half of the Machine Guns. Three guys who have never wrestled together versus three guys who have been in a stable together. And guess what? Experience won. So they were in there, and Callis was talking to the Impact viewers, and he said he was going to take a hiatus and head to Jacksonville. So he'll probably be away from Impact for a while and appear as an on-screen character alongside Kenny Omega for the foreseeable future. Eric Young would come out and bring his buddies, Joe Doring and Diener. They're doing that kind of interesting little group. Eric Young is cool, but he struggles to get over with like a mainstream audience. So he would come out, and he was taking on Rhino, and Eric Young would eventually go on to defeat Rhino. The match was pretty one-dimensional, but it was pretty much that they weren't really trying to promote what was happening in the ring. It was just about the furthering of the angle. They wanted to, you know, kind of keep pushing that story. So Eric Young's faction, of course, is called Violent by Design, and they wanted to make them seem dominant, like they were doing, you know, heel stuff to cheat and get over on Mr. Rhino there, who, despite being a veteran, could not overcome the odds. And then they beat him down. They fractured his ankle afterwards, and so it was just, you know, takes Rhino off TV for a bit, makes Violent by Design look strong. Just everybody kind of comes out of that. So the Good Brothers would then come out, and this was a good segment on the show. So they would talk about how they had won alongside Kenny Omega, and really that no one was surprised. And they vowed to remain champions, basically saying, you know, no one's going to be able to take these titles off of us. So Chris Sabin would come out, and he would say that they're spewing gibberish, and are they drunk? Have they been drinking? And he said that he was going to take the titles, and he made his case for a rematch. But because Alex Shelley is still out of action, he needed a different partner, which would be revealed to be James Storm, which was really cool. I've never been a huge Impact Wrestling or TNA guy, but I do remember James Storm and Robert Roode, of course, doing their version of APA or whatever you want to call it. And so it was cool because he's one of those guys. Every company kind of has one of their main guy who's kind of synonymous. WWE has Undertaker, WCW had Sting, and, you know, I can't really say James Storm is that guy for Impact because he lacks the star power compared to those two megastars. But he has been a guy that, for the most part, has always been an Impact Wrestling guy. When it comes to the bigger promotions and where you see him on TV, he was rumored to be going to WWE for a while, which would have been cool. But I just don't know ultimately if he would have fared any better than Robert Roode. I can't see them doing a team like Beer Money, especially because Roode is saddled with Ziggler. And, you know, I know they've done the tag team thing and whatnot, but ultimately a guy like that, at the very least, should be going for United States Championships and Intercontinentals. But they've got him doing what he's doing. So hopefully he'll get a better shake eventually. You never know in wrestling. Somebody goes down, next man up. Might be Robert Roode's time to be glorious again. So before James Storm and Alex Shelley could, or Chris Sabin rather, could make their case for why they should challenge for the tag titles, surprisingly, Matt Hardy came out with Private Party, which perhaps it shouldn't have been surprising because they do have, you know, the open borders type of relationship. But Matt Hardy came out and he kind of brokered a deal where it was decided that the main event of Impact was going to be his team of Private Party taking on Sabin and James Storm. And then the winners would be number one contenders to the Impact Wrestling World Tag Team Championships. So it really kind of set the table, let you think about like, okay, well, if these shows are doing these open border things, like how does that really factor in with championships and stuff like that? I'm really curious to see on the AEW side how that factors into the ranking system that they do, because I would think that if Impact guys go to AEW and they wrestle and they win or lose a match, that would count towards their win-loss total. But I don't necessarily think if AEW guys go to Impact that should count. That should kind of be separate. So, you know, whatever Private Party does in this match should not necessarily have a bearing, positive or negative, to what they do on Wednesday nights. But that's just my thing. I'm not saying they shouldn't acknowledge it. Like, it should still definitely exist, but it should be considered like interleague play in baseball. It's like outside your division, and it's just a little bit different. So that was really, really cool. And interestingly, I meant to bring this up earlier when I was talking about the figures. Matt Hardy is the only guy that's had a WWE action figure, an Impact Wrestling action figure. They made a two-pack with him and Jeff. And then now an AEW figure. So you figure, you know, Jericho has had WWE figures in AEW, but he was never in Impact. And you look at some of these guys that are kind of crossover players, like Moxley had figures in both brands, but never a third one. And it's as much as you can critique and criticize Impact to an extent, that toy had good distribution. I remember seeing those in Toys R Us stores and, you know, other places. I still see them pop up at like vintage shops, you know, secondhand places and things like that. But very, very interesting little sidebar there. So after that, we would move into Kimberly and Susan taking on the team of Jordynne Grace and Jazz. So it's really been cool to kind of see Jazz sticking around a little bit, because she had announced her retirement earlier last year. But now she's kind of getting a final run with Impact, and she's still got some stiff to offer to the wrestling world, and people respect her name and her legacy. And, you know, I don't necessarily think at this stage in her career she should get a run with the Knockouts title. But if they're going to continue to pair her with Grace, you know, definitely give those girls a championship run with the tag titles later. Because Jazz could probably still go for the rest of this year and then maybe bow out after that. And, you know, maybe let her go to Impact, or excuse me, to Jacksonville and wrestle in AEW. You know, she doesn't have to win a title, but put her up against, you know, whatever fantasy booking you want to do. Maybe Thunder Rosa or Britt Baker. I don't know what fantasy matchups people want to see Jazz in, but that would be pretty cool. So the Knockouts champion, Deonna Purrazzo, would come out to the ring with Kimberly and Susan ahead of their tag team match. And Matt Stryker was kind of talking about how there's now a renewed emphasis in the tag team division for the Knockouts, with the championships coming back. It really creates a sense of urgency for the girls and gives them that second thing, because no major wrestling promotion has a secondary women's championship. You know, you have your main girls belt, and then you don't really have anything else. Impact and WWE, of course, have the women's tag titles now. So that gives those people who are kind of floundering a place that they can exist. So Susan and Lee would go on to defeat the team of Grace and Jazz. And it was kind of like the opening thing. It was morely about putting over that trio of Susan and Deonna Purrazzo and Kimberly, more so than it was about who got the shine. Because Jazz is at that point in her career. If she wins, it's a bonus. If she loses, it's just great that you got to see her. So it let the heel team dominate over a former women's champion and a women's wrestling legend. So it really put some stuff over there. We would then get a backstage segment. Taya Valkyrie, who it would later be revealed was finished with Impact Wrestling. Her current contract was done. So now she's a free agent, and we'll see if she re-signs with Impact, if she goes to AEW, WWE, or maybe pops up somewhere else around the world. I ultimately think she has the most to give in AEW. I think she would be floundered if she went to WWE. I don't know that they would use her right. I think best case scenario, she would get a similar role to what her husband has, where she would kind of be a mid-card player, but like a second fiddle. Maybe she could even be paired with her husband directly. But I don't think that she would be prominently featured in a way that's respectful to really what she deserves and stuff. It would be cool to see her team up with John Morrison, though, and see if they go somewhere with that route. But I ultimately don't really think they will. But they did reveal her as the person who shot Johnny Bravo during his wedding to Rosemary. She said that she did it because she wanted to protect Rosemary. And Rosemary basically yelled at her and said, "How could you do this to me? This is why we don't have friends." And she would get kicked, dragged, kicking and screaming out of the Impact Zone. So we shall see what happens with Miss Taya Valkyrie later on in her wrestling career. So as we continue the recap of the show, the next thing we would see was some interaction between Rich Swann and Moose. So they would show us a recap from the pay-per-view where I think after the main event, Moose attacked Rich Swann. You know, they were partners in the match. And Moose had told Rich Swann he could count on him for that one match only, or however Moose talks. And basically he now tells him, as he continues to carry around the prop TNA championship, that he's coming for his championship. So we'll see. They have plenty of time to build for that if they so choose, because the next major pay-per-view from Impact is scheduled for April. They announced that, and we passed along the news over on Pro Wrestling Media, which, take a little break. If you are not already subscribed across our outlets, we are on every imaginable platform. You can follow me on Twitter. Mike S. Flanagan is my handle there. You can find us, Pro Wrestling Media, on Facebook. You can like the page. That's where a bulk of the content is coming out. Eventually, ProWrestlingMedia.com. We'll have a bunch of stuff. If you go on Instagram, it's Pro Wrestling Media with an underscore at the end. Those are the platforms. We're actually even on Tumblr. If you want to search out Pro Wrestling Media on there, a little secondary fun site that we like to be a part of. And I, as an individual, post a mixture of content on TikTok under the Mike S. Flanagan moniker as well. It is a mixture of boring mattress stuff, funny stuff that I think is funny, and then we're going to start getting some wrestling content put on there as well fairly soon. So, yeah, that's a little break there. So they have till April to build towards that title match if they want. But then they also do little intermittent Saturday specials where they'll do like pay-per-view quality matches on a Saturday on the Impact Plus app. If anybody's interested, I think it's $7.99 to subscribe over there. So I don't know. Like I said before, I don't really want to see Moose as a champion. I don't think he's a terrible talent. Like, he's in great shape. He has the look. He's not the best on the mic, but there's definitely way worse guys. But he's just kind of like a Bobby Lashley, where he has the look. He's big and he's tough and he's intimidating. But he just, like, he needs a manager, I think is what it is. I think if you put a manager with Moose and, you know, paint whatever picture, he's mostly been a heel, so you keep him as a heel, and you just have a guy come out and say, like, you know, Moose has had a chip on his shoulder for far too long because he's been overlooked by Impact management for years now, and it's finally time that he gets what he deserves. And then, you know, let somebody with a strong vocal presence kind of paint the picture and make Moose intimidating and make him scary. And just because right now he's doing, like, he has the look of a Bobby Lashley, where he's physically imposing and intimidating. You wouldn't want to run up against him in a dark alley because he's going to, you know, end your life. But then he's got the whole R-Truth thing going on, or the Brian Cage thing going on. Him and Brian Cage are actually the exact same character, now that I think about it. He just has better mic skills, which isn't saying anything. But, you know, you put Brian Cage with Taz and he's suddenly a better one. But he has a meaningless title that he carries around that's just a prop. I feel the same way about the FTW title. At least the TNA title story makes a bit more sense, because it used to be a real championship, whereas the FTW title never was. So I'd like to see them eventually drop that. You know, what they should do is have Moose just autograph that belt and auction that thing off and get rid of it. Get rid of it. Put it away forever. Let some super fan buy it, because it's golden and with the white strap, it's a beautiful belt. It's just such a stupid story, in my opinion. And even if it was a good story, even if you're sitting here and you disagree with me, and I respect your, you know, everybody's ability to have a differing opinion, it's just been drug on. Even a great storyline, you know, you look back in the annals, Rock versus Stone Cold is always going to be a good match. But do I want to see that match every single week on television? No. Give me a variety. So I'll stop harping on about that. Backstage, there would be a confrontation. The new tag team women's champions were talking with one of Johnny Bravo's fucking guys that are just background characters, and you can copy and paste a new guy in there because they're from Crazy Steve to Johnny Bravo himself to all those dudes. They're all interchangeable. Their characters are comic relief, and they're silly and they're stupid. But they were continuing the Fala Ba thing, where he stole the money and then the girls stole the money from him, and the other dude stole the money from the girls. And it's just like, why is nobody putting this money in a bank or spending it or whatever? And so Brian Myers, the most professional wrestler, comes out of an elevator that's nearby, and he gets kind of involved, and he and Fala Ba get into a little bit of an argument. And so Brian Myers is like, you want to go? And he's like, all right, yeah, we're gonna go. I'll see you in the ring. So they would have their match, and Ba would bounce Brian Myers around the ring and squash him in the corner. He'd take him down with a running hip attack and even a big Samoan drop. So he had the advantage. He got him with a bunch of different little headbutts. And then eventually Brian Myers would poke him in the eye, gain the upper hand. He'd deliver a clothesline to go on and win the match. And it was just another win for him. So he's now beat Tommy Dreamer and Fala Ba, and he won what was the equivalent of a pre-show match on the pay-per-view, and started on the bottom. I'm still here. Started on the bottom and a win matches, but don't advance. He's just stuck. He's floundering. I hope you guys liked my singing right there. That was really a little bit of improv for you. But yeah, Brian Myers is sick. I like him. He's cool. He's got the look. And I listened to the Major Figure Brother podcast, whatever, with him and Matt Cardona. But it's just like Matt Cardona and Brian Myers so very desperately want to be singles wrestlers, but they do everything in their power to make us only exclusively think of them as a tag team. So Matt Cardona is the better of the two, in my opinion. He has the better look. They are both in just absolutely phenomenal shape. But Brian Myers wears that creator wrestler attire. And I don't know if he does that to be funny. He actually calls his wrestling school Creator Pro. But his attire looks like if your friend went on WWE 2K and created a superstar version of himself and just went into a lot of detail on the face and the body and made himself really buff, but then just put the stupidest little Kurt Angle leotard on. And so he makes himself look amateur. He doesn't look like the most professional wrestler when he wears the traffic cone orange and then the bright big blue. Like, you know, it sounds like I'm being critical and harping on a lot of these wrestlers, but with a lot of these Impact guys, there's a reason they're in Impact. They lack that little thing that pushes them over the top. And Brian Myers and Cardona should just be a tag team. Just give themselves a name. They've always lacked a team name. I guess they were the Major Bros for a while when they debuted in WWE. But Brian Myers' biggest success in WWE has always been attached to Matt Cardona. And there's no shame. The Dudley Boys are one of the greatest tag teams, one of the easily the greatest tag team, maybe. You know, you look at Edge and Christian, you look at the Hardy Boys. And sure, all of those guys at different points in their career, with the exception of Devon, for the most part, kind of went on singles runs and had success. And Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy, and Bubba Ray were all at different points, and even Edge and Christian to an extent. I guess he had the world championship. They all won world titles, so they had singles success. But it's just like, I just don't see that. I don't see any scenario anywhere where Matt Cardona or Brian Myers, especially Brian Myers, ever become realistic world champions. And I don't think there's anything you can do to, you know, really change my opinion on that. It just, it is what it is. Matt Cardona could possibly go to a place like Ring of Honor and could win a championship there and be fairly believable. But I can't see that guy being a believable champion in AEW or back in WWE, even if it was NXT, maybe. So I don't really know. But I like Brian Myers. Hopefully Impact will figure out something to do with that guy. So we would then go on to our main event, which was, of course, Private Party and Chris Sabin versus and James Storm. So James Storm and all that. Sorry, I'm really stumbling over my words because in my recap, I labeled Chris Sabin as Chris Sabina. It's a very exotic name. And it just spiraled me onto thinking about like Sabrina the Teenage Witch and stuff like that. But during the match, Tony Khan, the president of AEW, and Jerry Lynn would come out and they would sit ringside during the main event. So it was the first time Tony Khan has really appeared. Apparently he's going to be an on-screen character. I don't really agree with that. It was a stark contrast. Jerry Lynn, of course, an in-ring performer, an on-screen talent for many years and many promotions all around the world, came out, set up two chairs, very stoic look on his face, like, yeah, we're here on business. We are scouting the competition. You know, whatever the reason is why Tony Khan would be scouting Impact is not immediately clear to me. The storyline needs to be ironed out a little more. And then Tony Khan is out there marking out for himself. And I get it. I get that as a wrestling fan, that's got to be completely exciting. But come on, man. Like, you got to sit there. You got to see him. Like, if you're shitting on the competition, like he and Tony Schiavone always do in those paid advertisements, if you're shitting on the competition, you really need to not be out there smiling like, ooh, I get to see James Storm in action. Like, you got to be a little more stoic and a little more realistic. In my opinion, He busted out a notebook like he was taking notes. Not sure if he's what he's taking notes on, if he thinks that those guys are beneath him. A lot of fans speculate that this whole thing is going to end with AEW possibly buying Impact. I don't really think that's true. I don't see any scenario of how that's helpful for anybody, especially because like Scott D'Amore and whatnot. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong and time will tell, but it seemed like they invested a lot of money. I don't know if they would come into AEW as partners and try to form a bigger second competition to WWE. But I don't really know that at the end of the day. There's a few gems in Impact. I just don't know if you add those gems to AEW. Do they put AEW over the top? Do they make them seem next level? Do they pose a bigger threat? I think if you took all the wrestling talent from Impact and put them in All Elite Wrestling, you're still more or less in the same exact position that you were before. I don't necessarily know that you're better. That doesn't push you next level. AEW has only cleared a million viewers in ratings, like less than three times so far. So I don't know that putting those guys in there is what it takes, because that needs to be the next step for them, is consistently clearing a million. They're doing really good right now. They're clearing 800,000 and 931,000 on a consistent basis, and they're whipping NXT's ass. Like, they've only lost like four times or less. But now they need to get into the upper echelons of competing against the ratings that SmackDown's putting on and competing against the ratings that Raw is putting on. So Private Party would go on to win this match, making them now the number one contenders due to Impact and Dark being pre-tapes. Impact or Private Party was actually able to appear on both shows, which was kind of neat. And so they'll face the Good Brothers. I don't know if that's next week or if that's down the line, but they have an Impact title shot. I don't expect them to win that, but it would be interesting to see what could happen storyline-wise if an Impact guy won an AEW title or if an AEW guy won an Impact championship. It would be very, very interesting to see really what way the storyline could go with all of that stuff. Time will tell if we will eventually see that. Maybe somebody wins the X Division title or the, I don't really see a scenario when the TNT title could go onto Impact for obvious reasons, because it's named after the network. But there are lots of interesting things, guys. It is Wednesday night if you listen to this live. So we will get AEW tonight and NXT. We'll try to cram all the coverage into one episode, and then we'll also have Major League Wrestling. So if you record it on DVR or you watch it live or you got to find a friend or you only get to watch MLW on YouTube, I do encourage you to watch it all, because they've all got lots of shining stars. You can see some match previews and such over on our Instagram page, as well as our other social media accounts. Facebook, of course, one of the best ways to keep up with us. But Daivari joined Contra. He's making his debut on Major League Wrestling tonight. So there's a lot of different, really fun storylines in all of the different promotions. Alex Hammerstone's on MLW if you've never seen him. He's really good. Filthy Tom Lawler, the 2020 Opera Cup winner, is going to be in action, addressing a beatdown that he sustained. So lots of really cool stuff going on with Jacob Fatu and just everything that's happening over in Major League Wrestling. So as a fan, you owe it to yourselves, even if you can't stay current, because there's so much over inundation of product and you cannot get your ears and your eyes on all the product at all times. Don't feel like you need to do all this homework and watch every single second of every single show. Just tune in to what you can. If you are lucky enough to check 10 minutes of MLW and a full hour of AEW or NXT or Ring of Honor or Impact, whatever it is, get your eyes on whatever you can, because there's a lot of great talent. Every company has its high and low points. And as a fan, you owe it to yourselves. There's nothing cooler than being able to watch a superstar as they're kind of in their coming up phase, and then eventually seeing them showcased on one of the two bigger shows and being like, I remember seeing that guy come up, and this feels special. You form a connection as a fan to these people, and we never know how long we have them around to enjoy, whether that's injuries or untimely passings. So we want to celebrate all these men and women who sacrifice their bodies for us. Thank you guys for listening. I'm tapping out, and we will see you next time.